Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Hello, Dream Big listeners. I'm so glad you're out there, and I do appreciate all of you contacting me with information and comments about the show so far. And don't hesitate if you ever want to tell me what you think of the show or things, topics that you might want to hear about it. You know, go ahead and send it to me either at jill@jilljack.com or find us on empowerradio.com and see me that way. But today, I have a guest that I'd been watching from afar, seeing what he was doing. It just pulled at my heartstrings so much. And you ever have those things where you're like, man, I wish I could be a part of that. And I must have put it out in the universe loud enough, because last year we were very close to working together. But I had job conflicts and I couldn't do it. And my heart was broken because I really thought, man, it was so close. I could have worked with him. Well, guess what? The universe provided, and this year we were able to work together. This man had a vision. He had, I mean, we're going to find out all about what drives him. And it's was such a beautiful experience for me, life-changing experience for me that I know I will carry with me the rest of my life. And so first of all, I want to introduce Mike Ball from lostvoices.org. How are you?
I am fantastic. Jill, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good, and I miss you because we spent a lot of time together a couple weeks ago, didn't we?
I know. We did indeed.
Yes. Yes. So, Lost Voices, can you just start? I guess you can explain what Lost Voices is now, and then also I'd love to hear how it began.
Okay. Well, we are a group of professional musicians who do songwriting workshops, songwriting and performing workshops with kids whose lives have been devastated. There's a lot of them rescued out of human trafficking. They've been abused, mistreated. A lot of them are substance addicted. Mm-hmm. We've worked with incarcerated kids. And what we do is we, in a nutshell, we sit down, spend a week writing songs with them. Then we put them on stage with us, mm-hmm, to perform the songs that they've written. And which gives, on so many levels, it just validates their lives, gives them a chance to dig in and move forward.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you first approached me and you told me what we were going to accomplish, I'm going to be honest. I was like, how in the hell are we going to get all this done in a week? And then, so that was my fear, I guess, fear-based. And then Sunday, the beginning of the week, we actually did a concert for them. Mm-hmm. And most of their body language was arms folded, eyes right, rolling, you know, like kind of picking at each other instead of paying attention. And I'm like, how are we going to connect? And the first day I met with you, we got there early. I was nervous. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I mean, I'm great with kids, but I didn't know, you know, how to do it. And I just watched you, and you slowly, artistically peel away layers of their fear and their anger. And you have, and I learned so much from you. I have to ask you, how did you begin this journey? How did you start it, and why?
Well, it was a complete accident. I've made my living basically as a creative person my whole life. I've been a writer since the 70s and an author. And I've worked in the advertising business as a creative director, which is basically herding cats. You have creative people, getting them going in the same direction. Been a hockey coach. For many, many years, I've done creative writing workshops with teens and adults, and particularly for teens. Over the years, we found that they were able to express things that they needed to express. A lot of times they've got things bottled up that are pretty profound. So about 12, 13 years ago, a friend of mine was the librarian at a maximum security boys detention center called Maxie Boys. It was the last stop before big boy prison for boys between the ages of 12 and 18. Most of them are about 14, 15 years old, which is, that statement is pretty, astounding to think about. There's children, 13, 14 year old kids that are one step away from spending their lives in prison. And she asked me to go out for career day to talk about what it was like to write sophomoric jokes for a living. And so I did, but I really knew nothing about it. I had been a high school hockey coach, which is where you corral clouds of testosterone and put them on the ice. So I went out to this place, and when I first saw the kids, I mean, first off, being a writer, I think you can relate to this. You sort of fantasize, you know, you sort of build stories in your mind. What's it going to be like? And are they going to be in shackles? I really had no clue. Saw the first bunch of kids come marching down. They had their arms folded. They had little locator devices riveted around their wrists, and they're in order of height and not talking. And there's a guy flanking them. He's not in uniform, but he's clearly a guard. The euphemism is staff. And I looked at these kids, and they were Hispanic and black and white, but they were my child. They were my son. They're just no different. I was just kind of overwhelmed by that feeling, that recognition that these are children.
Right.
And then as I talked to them, I could see that I talked to them about the fact that you can make a living with your ideas. And I just saw this. And again, you being a performer, you know what it's like when you see an audience just completely go, oh my God, this is this, they're connect. So I started a creative writing group with the boys out there at Maxie, and just astounded at what they could do. So I got a little money from the National Endowment for the Humanities, and did a mini documentary on one of the kids called Young Poet Incarcerated. Again, just to say, hey, world, look at what these kids can do.
Right.
This kid was ultra violent, almost a Clockwork Orange violent offender, and absolutely brilliant. He had feelings and ideas that he could express that were just outstanding. So as I was wrapping up this documentary and going back and forth with the grants, you know what grants are like.
Oh, yeah.
I got a call from the Michigan Humanities Council. They were the grantor for this the national grant, and they said, we really love what you're doing out here. Would you be willing to take another grant? They said, we've got $25,000. We'll write the grant for you. We'll do the evaluation.
You're like, okay.
It's like, well, you know, I had written one grant.
Oh my gosh.
And it was successful. And so I'm thinking, oh, this is what it's like. They like you. They just keep giving you money. I had no idea. So, and they said, you know, what would you like to do to kind of further your work with these young people? I said, oh, music. I've been a musician since I'm 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it saved my life on a number of occasions, just being that lifeline. So I said, yeah, you know, I want to do, let's write folk music with with these juvenile offenders. And after kind of a long pause, it's okay, your check's in the mail. So I recruited a personal hero of mine, Josh White Jr. He was a guy that I was a rocker in the 60s, and I was sick of having friends and money, so I wanted to be a folk singer. And I got myself a folk guitar and started learning Josh White Jr. guitar licks. He was playing great guitar licks on his dad's records. And here he lives in Michigan, so I called him up, and he said, like, it's really funny to hear you say how nervous you were. He said, you know, this can't work. There's no way this is going to work.
Right.
And Josh and I did the very first one. He said, so what's the plan? I said, I have no plan whatsoever. we're going to go in and we're going to write songs with the kids. Well, how's it going to work? I don't know. We're going to figure it out. We're going to try things and see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, literally 10 minutes before the first one, he tried to bail out. He said, you know, I don't think it's going to work. I said, well, it's too late now. We got to work. We're on a trajectory. So we went in. And it really didn't take long. You described it perfectly. The arms folded, heads down, sometimes rocking, that body language.
Even sleeping.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's so many levels of dissociation or protection. And, you know, at the time, I didn't really know what it was. I've had lots of time to analyze it, and we've recently gotten a lot more clinical about it to really understand it. But these kids are the incarcerated kids, or the kids that we've been working with lately, the group that you and I worked with are fostered. These are girls who are rescued out of human trafficking and other vile situations where they can't, they don't have a home to go to. They share that they've all been subjected to trauma beyond what most people, you know, everybody has hard things in their lives. We all have things that we've got to get by. Some of the things that these kids have gone through are just unspeakable.
And you don't, I mean, that's what blows my mind is that when you work with them and you hear their songs and their words and you're like, oh my God, like, and yeah, I have a daughter. And so immediately you go to that and think, wow, what if that would have happened to her? And to know that these kids are still able some point to smile at you, to actually verbalize.
Sure.
I mean, it blows my mind, but how did you, so, I mean, from where you were to where you are now, I mean, the steps that you've taken, is it just because it just evolved and you learned from it? And I mean, now you've got, you know, tell us where you are now with the current situation with U of M. And
yeah, well, so we did this, and what we do, it just, it, you know, to encapsulate it, we do two different things with the kids. We'll write a group song, which my instincts just the first time told me that this would probably be a good place to start. Didn't really think it through. Turns out it's a perfect thing to do. We write a group song, you know, what's on your mind? And the kids will, sometimes it's pizza, usually it's boys or whatever, but, or girls, depending on. But they'll always come to some conclusion, and you saw it in process.
Right.
The first group, when Josh and I were doing it, it was choices. These guys were all locked up.
Right.
And they, you know, one of them said, you get locked up for making bad choices. Another one said, yeah, and in here we don't make choices. It's like, wow, okay. So that's pretty profound. When you're locked up, you don't make choices. I said, so what are you guys worried about? Well, we're going to get out, and you know, what's going to happen? We make a bad choice, we're in prison. It's like, yeah, okay. Well, let's make a song about that. So we talked about, you know, and what we do, again, you've seen it. We don't instruct them. We don't teach them. Here is the structure of a song. Here is how the bridge. We don't do that. What we do is say, hey, there's couple ways to tell a story. We can say, I did this and I did that and I fell. Or we can create a character and we can beat the crap out of that character. we can expose them to anything and see what happens. And they decided in this first song to create a character. And it was a guy named Eddie who was getting released from incarceration, and they came up with a chorus that's like, in and out of locked doors, same old song and dance. This time's got to be different. Ain't gonna be another chance.
I love it.
And it's just like we wrote a blues song. Oh yeah,
so good.
It's phenomenal. And it came out. What was funny about that? And again, you've witnessed it. Now we went. When you start with a group of these kids, they're looking at the floor and that sort of thing. As soon as you start asking them how they feel and really, and you make it clear, you know, kids have BS detectors that are very, very
totally
strong.
Especially these kids.
Yeah. They have to.
They've seen it. Their intuition is off the charts.
Oh, if they don't have it, they're dead.
Right. Exactly.
They really haven't survived.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. So they read you very quickly, and they know exactly what you're, where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they understand that, then they just really, they just start opening up. I mean, we got into this thing. We got the second session with these boys, and when we were writing Eddie's Choice, we had a NPR radio crew out to record it.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to them a little bit. Now, these are incarcerated teenage boys. The reporter was extremely attractive and dressed attractively. Mm-hmm. And she brought a extremely attractive intern with her.
Oh, dear.
And she had the intern carrying, I don't know what the word for it is, but it's a long mic, crawling around in the floor.
Oh, God.
in the circle from boy to boy. As somebody, it's like, man, I can't think of anything more distracting to a teenage boy than a gorgeous young woman crawling
on the floor.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And after less than 5 minutes, they stopped paying attention to either one of these women.
Oh, really?
And re-engaged in the song. And they wrote, I think, one of the single best lines I think I've heard in music, certainly in this program. Mister, you don't know me. I've been preached to all my life. Until you've been locked up, you'll never know just what it's like.
Wow.
And they did this with this gorgeous young blonde crawling around on the floor, which shows you how important these thoughts are to them, these feelings and ideas. They just really override everything. You watch it in action. It's hard to believe until you see it.
Well, and I think one of the things that one of the girls expressed when we were doing ours is that this is the only place and the only time during their day that they feel freedom, that they feel they can just be themselves, say what they want, not be judged.
Right.
And I think for me, I will admit that the hardest thing for me was not to lead them.
Right.
That was very difficult because as a songwriter of 25 years, and as a mom, and as, but I learned from you to step back. That was very difficult to step back and let them talk, just listen and just be like, oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. And, did that come naturally to you?
I guess so. That's something that I kind of struggled with for years, trying to figure out why we got, because there's other kinds of songwriting workshops the kids get. A lot of places we work have music therapists. They haven't been able to achieve the results we get. And we really had no idea why. I thought, you know, just it was just, everything, it all seemed just obvious to me that this is how you talk to a kid and this is how you deal with things. Apparently, it's not so obvious and this goes back to, I've had the advantage of sort of being a lifelong coach in a lot of different ways. The hockey coach, the creative director, that's a matter of coaching. What the concept is to take a person, whatever the situation is, look for that little spark of greatness in them, whatever it is, and then let them express it.
Right.
And get out of the way.
Get out of the way. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That seems real obvious, and I guess it's not. People want to teach, they want to impart knowledge and that sort of thing, and that's not what this is about.
Right. I think that, and that you hit the nail on the head, is that if and I think this is good, not just even for what Lost Voices does, but in the world itself.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be recognized for something and to be acknowledged and to be listened to. And I mean, what I learned from that week, it's actually changed my relationships with like everyday people.
That's
and
great.
Yeah. And so, you know, we did do everything that you said we'd do. We had, two wonderful group songs that I still can't get out of my head. And then all of those, how many kids do we have? Like 20 maybe?
Yeah, we had 22 or 23 kids all together.
So I'm going to express how it was done with my session that I worked with Mike, is that, you know, we were there on Sunday to perform for them. And then Monday through Friday from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock, we worked with individuals and then we did the song group songs and created all this beautiful stuff. And at the end, like Mike says, they perform. You see the highs and lows throughout the week. One day they come in and they're like, hey, how you doing? And the next day they don't want to talk to you at all. And you have to ebb and flow with it. It's an incredible experience.
Yes, it is. And we've discovered that over the last about 12, 14 months that what's going on there is called, what we do is called trauma-informed care. The understanding, what's been wonderful, we've been working with the University of Michigan School of Nursing and some other folks, but they have a concentrated program where they're trying to adapt systems for working with kids who have been, or people who have been exposed to severe trauma, and particularly youth is their focus, which is of course ours. And it turns out that the fundamental, the bottom line of it is that when somebody does something that's bad or disturbing or disrupting, most people will respond by going, "What's wrong with you?"
Right.
You know, why would you do something stupid like that? Why are you acting like that? What's wrong with you? And the trauma-informed care concept is that instead of doing that, you think, "Wow, what happened to you? Mm-hmm. You know, can we explore that? You know, what's the thing?" I mean, that sounds kind of squishy, but it's not. It's a real fundamental change in attitude. And for some reason, I can't really tell you why. I had kind of a traumatic background when I was a kid, which probably helps that
sure.
and the combination of all the other things I've done. It just seemed natural to me to take that approach with them, and they sense that, they get it. And
it takes the defense right out of it. Mm-hmm. They aren't defensive at that point. It's almost like a soft place to fall.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's completely non-judgmental. You know, you just got to make it clear that it's 100% non-judgmental.
Right. And that can be hard for human nature. I mean, just because we all have, we all think that we know the right way, mm-hmm. you know, or
right.
we can see what's best for someone. But in this case, no one's experienced what these kids have experienced. I mean, I haven't experienced what, I mean, some of the girls that we had had witnessed their brother die right mm-hmm. next to them.
On top of them.
Yeah, saw the blood dripping and wrote about it. And
yeah,
you had to just not fall apart listening
right,
to it.
Right.
But it was kind of mind-boggling to get your head around the fact that this poor girl, I mean, I don't say poor girl, but yeah, poor girl
yeah.
that had to go through it.
Yeah.
But still her delivery of the song that she did.
Yeah.
I mean, she killed it. She got up there and she just like, and that was one that I think she was the one that was sleeping early on.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Do you want to write?" And she said, "Nope."
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay." So I left her alone. And then Jen Cass, who was with us, she goes, "Don't worry, she'll come around."
Mm-hmm.
And with 10 minutes later, she said, "Can I have a book
mm-hmm.
and a pen?" And I go, "Okay." And then mm-hmm. she came out with those songs.
Mm-hmm.
So, would you like to share a song or two with us, or do you want to talk more about like what people can find out about and how they can help with Lost Voices?
Well, you know, what I can do is I can give you a recording of that concert.
That'd be
phenomenal.
And
then you can take any cut from it. That may be to hear their voices rather than mine.
Oh, I would love
it. My voice isn't important.
That would be great. That would be great. We'll play that.
The kids will come up with things like, "Somebody save me. I'm praying for someone to save me. I am a prisoner. Come set me free." And then they'll wind up the song. "I once was a prisoner. Now I am free."
Right.
They will make these transformations. And there's hundreds of, yeah, go to lostvoices.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see for yourself what the kids look like. You can see some interviews with us. You can actually watch that Young Poet Incarcerated film.
Is that on the?
It's on the website.
Okay,
it's 15
great.
Minutes. It's not a big time commitment, but it will change your life. You'll cry.
Yes. We
but
spent a lot of time crying, but it was a good cry.
It is a good cry. You know, I've told people, a lot of us who do this have problems with it. We all are emotional. We miss those kids.
I think I talked to you on the phone, or I either emailed you that the next day I was at the gym and I kept seeing the girls.
Mm-hmm.
Like I kept seeing either an older version of what
mm-hmm.
they will be
mm-hmm.
or, and all you can do is hope that they get
right
the help that they need, because they're right. beautiful human beings.
They
and
are.
Everyone deserves a chance.
Yeah. And we let them release that beauty and we let them see it.
Yes.
The thing is, we don't tell them they're wonderful. We let them see it for themselves.
Right.
And that's it works so well.
And you can witness the breakthroughs mm-hmm. of these girls. You know, the one girl that said, I'm just talking from the experiences I had where I said, you know, "Do you want to write a song?" She's like, "No." And I said, "Are you sure?" And she's like, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you know, just like, you know, maybe something that's on your mind. What's on your mind?" She goes, "Nothing." And I go, "Why, that is a great topic."
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at me like I was crazy. I go, "Yeah, write about nothing."
Mm-hmm.
And the staff was sitting there and they actually started laughing. And I go, "Seriously, just write the word nothing and see what comes up." And then Jen, one mm-hmm. of the staff writers, helped her write this great rhythmic beat mm-hmm. beat to it. And she did a rap thing. Now, she didn't perform it that night, but she still connected mm-hmm. to it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw what it could do. And I just think it's miracles that happened there.
It is. That little girl that you saw as a diva, Dania,
yeah.
She was absolute diva from this. Well, in the last session that I did, she was in one before. She started out, oh, I can't do nothing. I don't have, I'm just not good at this sort of thing. There's no way I can do anything. We wrote a song and she is now front and center, jumping out, commanding the crowd.
Absolutely. So, yes. I mean, that was our first concert. You had brought her up mm-hmm. to show what could be done. And, you know, I was like, she didn't want to sing before and she was amazing. Mm-hmm. So I think another thing too is that they literally do not only find their internal voice, mm-hmm. but they find that they can sing.
Right.
Or rap or whatever, speak mm-hmm. poetry. Mm-hmm. I think to wrap it up, we can talk about a wonderful human being who had a very, very, very intense reading. And the theme was, I'm still here. She described every single thing that ever happened to her, which mm-hmm. was horrid, and said, but I'm still here and I'm not going anywhere.
The anger that child started out with is just almost inconceivable. And there she was. She was able to express it and then smile and cry.
And cry.
She cried and then...
She had the whole room crying, yeah. But she had the whole room screaming uh-huh. with applause.
That's
and
right.
She got a standing ovation for doing that because it released from her, but it also gave us the opportunity to show her love too. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, please go to lostvoices.org. Mike, I want to thank you for, one, having me involved in this project. And yes, we continually cry when we're together. but it's good cries. It's good tears. Tears are good for you to mm-hmm. Cleanse your soul. But please check out lostvoices.org and support it because it is a beautiful thing. And so thanks for joining Dream Big and continue to do what you do. You're making the world a better place.
Well, thank you so much.